Reiner Schock from TSN joins us. Schocker, are you still doing your interview with Patrick Maroon?
Well, you are not one to talk about long-winded interviews in the dressing room. I don't want to hear a word out of your mouth about that. You are the worst for your 6 to 10 minute get to know yous on game days.
No, I never do it on a game day. I'll do it on, I did one on a game day. I do it on practice days. And I always do it when guys, it's not the most popular guy that everyone wants to talk to.
Oh, yeah. Are you trying to chirp me for interviewing Maroon for a long time?
Well,
today?
No, it wasn't. It was that. But then you guys just huddled around so no one else could get an interview in. That's the part about it.
Oh, I see. So you were when Kevin Quinn and Mark Spector and myself were asking him a few questions, a little more, not off the record, but chatting with him afterwards, you were hovering around waiting to jump in. Well, why can't you just jump in when the rest of us grabbed him? I mean, why do you need special time with them?
Well, because he wanted to do a 10-minute interview with them.
No, I did my one-on-one. Okay. I had my three questions. Scrums are terrible. I don't like scrums.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't throw stones at. I mean, we play by the rules. We get them when we're supposed to. And if you want to slide in there after for your little Gregor time, your little shimmy into the stall with them and saddle up nice and close, that's on you if you got to wait a little bit.
I just never seen you have warm pee. You didn't even have your, like, were you, the thing is, because I know you can't remember everything he said because you had no recorder, you had no mic. I was just curious, like, do you have some hidden microphone now on your lapel that you were recording the interview with?
Well, I did a piece on Patrick Maroon today. It was on SportsCenter. And, we were just digging in a little bit. I think it's interesting. We've talked a lot about him on the show the last week, and I think he's an interesting story this year. I mean, he's playing 12 to 14 pounds lighter. He's shooting the lights out. So it was definitely time to do something a little more in depth on the big man.
Well, the thing about Maroon is, and he joked about it. He goes, geez, you score a few goals, everyone wants to talk to you. He's not somebody that's had – he actually enjoys talking to the media and the fans. And the one thing that I get from a lot of people are like, man, I really like Maroon because he just comes across non-cliche. You know, the guy's shows real heart. You know, he was pretty choked up just seeing his son. And I think a lot of fans resonate to the human side of players, and he doesn't kind of hide that. Whereas a lot of players, it seems at times, are like, well, geez, I don't want people to know my personality, so I'm just going to give them cliche answers.
Well, I mean, I think guys sometimes play it safe, and I'm not going to blame anybody for that. I mean, they gotta play it how they want to play it. But yeah, Maroon is definitely putting himself out there for people to get to know him a little bit. He's got some personality. He doesn't just give you the basic answers. You ask him questions and he answers them. I mean, I asked him today about a little bit of complacency setting into his game and that game in Winnipeg where he went out there and fought Thorburn and scored a goal, and he's been really, really good ever since. And he flat out admitted that McClellan challenged him. He flat out challenged him. And he's not afraid to make fun of himself. He's not afraid to show a little bit of weakness. And I get the sense from when you talk to other players about him, it's always in, you can learn a lot about a guy by the way his teammates talk about him or the looks on their faces when you ask them questions. And you ask anybody in that room a question about Patrick Maroon, their face lights up, they usually smile. And it just seems to me that not only is he having all sorts of success on the ice, but he's become a real integral part of that dressing room and a real glue guy in that room that people are happy to rally behind. And that's a big deal. That means something off the ice.
Oilers Sharks first place on the line. Oilers put Eberle back with Nugent Hopkins and Lucic looking to get them going. And Eberle's game actually away from the puck, I think, has improved a lot. He just can't finish right now to save his life.
Yeah. I mean, I still think that there's a little bit too much perimeter play in Eberle's game right now. I'd like to see him maybe start to pay the price a little bit more physically to get to some tough areas and get himself a little banged up in the name of taking the puck to the interior. I find his game has been pretty perimeter lately for whatever reason. I agree with you, though. He has been better, and he hasn't been able to bury it. Like, his points don't really reflect the number of chances I think he's been getting. But I think, I mean, setting his points aside, focusing on his play, I do think he's been a little bit perimeter lately. And I think it's interesting that they put him where they put him. They gave him a look for a few games on basically the team's third line. That played Cassian ahead of him. That sends a little bit of a message. But now they get into this zone where they've made some changes. You know, they've with Gustafsson on waivers, with Puljujärvi down to the minors, they're playing Draisaitl on that big line. they're going to need Jordan Eberle. And so they need to continue to put him in positions to succeed because they're going to need him. So it wasn't a surprise at all to me to see him on a true second line, $6 million men that all need to get going a little bit, but a true second line.
Who do you take, if you're starting your own team, between Martin Jones and Cam Talbot?
Oh, goodness. Martin Jones and Cam Talbot. Are we just talking strictly the player, or are we talking contracts and the whole bit?
Let's just say strictly the player.
Yeah, strictly the player. Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I really like the direction that Cam Talbot's game is heading in. I just think he's just getting better and better. His confidence is growing. He's taking step after step and having success after success. I think he's got a great attitude. I love his competitiveness, his fieriness. There's a lot of things about Cam Talbot that I really like. So hard not to go with him. And I guess in fairness, I know him better than I know Martin Jones. Like I know Talbot pretty well. Jones is the younger of the two, and you maybe have to factor that in a little bit, but Talbot doesn't have a lot of miles on him. I would probably say Talbot, but more because I know the player more thoroughly. How about you guys?
Well, Martin Jones, 2 years younger, and which does make a difference for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting one because Talbot's faced 209 more shots in the two extra starts that he's had, which obviously he's not going to have 105 shots per game. So he's clearly facing more rubber every night out. He's got a better save percentage than Jones. Jones, though, of course, after last year's run, has more playoff experience.
Yeah.
You know, if you're starting the organization today, the 2 years does make a big difference.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. I mean, you want to have a guy, but goalies can still, they're not like power forwards. I mean, but 32, 33, 34, you can still play pretty good net. And Talbot doesn't have a ton of miles on him. And as for the playoff experience, I think that's fair. But Cam Talbot was also really good for Canada at the World Championship and played in some pressure hockey there. So it's not necessarily his fault. He hasn't seen that yet. He played behind, both guys have played behind sensational starters. Both guys have experience behind a world-class netminder. So I don't think you can go wrong with either guy. There's a competitiveness in Cam Talbot. There's a snap factor in him and a fire that I like that I think is going to serve him well if they do get into playoff hockey with him.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Joe Thornton, do you expect him to be one of the six active players on the top 100?
Yeah, that was interesting. I was just doing a little bit of reading about it, and I won't say that I've gone real in-depth to put a list together or anything like that, but, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, or he's going to be, and he's been around for so long. He's been so good, so consistent for so long. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he's on that list, and he probably should be, not having it all necessarily set out right in front of me, but, I mean, he's just been a fantastic player for a really long time and consistently excellent for a really long time. So I feel like he should probably be there.
Well, I would, out of the active players, I think he has to be there. He's 12 assists shy of 1,000 in his career. He'd be only the 13th player in the NHL history.
What Friedman say to there do that? Six active players that were going to be on that list?
Yeah, that's what they're saying, yep.
Yeah, so I mean, you'd have to think he's going to be one of them. You'd have to think that.
Well, yeah, I would think Jerome McGinley's one who's going to be on. He's got 600 goals. I don't see how it can't be on that list.
Yep.
Right? And Roberto Luongo is an interesting one to me. If I'm not sure if he...
I don't think he makes the top 100.
Yeah, because he's, what is he now, fourth in wins all-time in goalies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's tough.
Well, Jamie McLennan was talking about him a little bit last night on That's Hockey Tonight. I know Jamie, I mean, he might be a little bit biased because he backed up for him and they're buddies, although he said, I'm not being biased. But, I mean, you know, his international play has been fantastic. He's won as a backup but a starter as well. You know, other guys have maybe had more regular season success in terms of team success, but how much should that factor in? I mean, the numbers are the numbers, wins are wins, longevity is longevity. All those things need to be considered. I mean, he's been one of the best for a long time too. But he is an interesting one because he's not a shoe-in.
No, he isn't at all. But Joe Thornton, to me, Yeah, he's a heck of a player. He's been dominant for a long time. And I would have him on my top 100. I know some people won't, and that's fine. But, you know, there's some other guy, you know, Crosby, Ovechkin, I think, are kind of obvious that should be there. We'll see. A lot of people are saying, would you have Carey Price ahead of Roberto Luongo?
Yeah, well, I mean, from an international standpoint, he's accomplished a heck of a lot, too. And he's been at the top of his game.
Yeah, but keep in mind, the NHL has nothing to do with international hockey.
Yeah,
the top 100 NHL players.
Yeah, I understand. So it's, you know, I guess if it's just dialed in strictly to NHL play, I don't know. I mean, I don't have my own list, and I don't have their list sitting in front of me. He's been a good player for a long time. And dominating at a level, I mean, he's had a couple of runs where the level of separation between him and the next guy has been massive. It's seldom where you can have a guy separate himself from every other one of his peers to that extent. And that's something that's special that Carey Price has done. I mean, it's not very often that goaltenders are talked about as most valuable players on the planet, and he's been in that conversation.
When you look at the Oilers against the Sharks tonight, and their home record has not been good enough yet, 9-7-2. It's not awful like other years, but they want to be better at home. And you look at a lot of their elements of their game, like Connor McDavid's point totals on the road, they're significantly better at home. Like,
yeah.
So maybe it's just as simple as, hey, if McDavid plays better, the team plays better at home. But their whole team has struggled much more at home than on the road. And I'm really not sure why. Like, you know, Zach Cassian said their starts early have just, for most part, has been a big issue.
It's weird. And we've been talking about it a lot this season. You look for trends in their game. You look for personality traits in their game. I mean, you would think players would be more comfortable. You'd think they'd be more relaxed. You would think last change would put them in a better position. You'd think a lot of these things, yet it kind of, for whatever reason, hasn't really added up for the Oilers. And, I mean, the last time you asked me this question about the home rank, I brought up the ice. I think it has something to do with it. I don't think that for a brand new arena, a state-of-the-art facility, and an ice plant that's brand new, I think they've had a bit of a struggle with it. I don't know exactly where it's at now, but I do know it was an issue for them earlier on. And that's one thing you want to have. You want to have reliable ice and be able to have players be, you know, a power play still be good 18 minutes into a period and not have pucks bouncing all over the place. I think that maybe has something to do with it. I don't know how much, but it's a strange trait. And sometimes they're anomalies. Sometimes there's no real way to explain it, but I'll say this, there's a good chance for that to turn. I mean, they're supposed to be better at home. And if they start winning more games at home, they're going to start to put a little bit of separation between themselves and other teams. So that's not a bad problem for them to have, because that one's got a chance of getting better. They should be better at home.
I honestly think it's power play. I think it's their power play at home has not been as good as their power play on the road, and when they don't score power play goals, they don't win nearly as many games.
Yeah, but why? I mean, what would cause your power play to not be as good at home? I mean, it's just bizarre. You throw the same five players out there, and you're in the offensive zone, so the face-off advantage stays the same. What's the deal with that? And there's not, to me, there isn't really a logical way you can put your finger on it. There's no thing you can point to and go, well, this is why their power play has struggled at home. It shouldn't. It should be the same.
And what's interesting about it is the Oilers have had 69 power play opportunities on the road in 24 games. They've had 63 power play opportunities in 18 games at home. Significantly more per game at home. And a lot of times they say, hey, you can get into a rhythm more when you get more power plays. And it hasn't happened yet for them success-wise. Their power play is 15.9 at home and 26.1%. on the road.
They do not keep it simple at home. They try to be too fancy, and I think it's because you're too comfortable at home. And on the road, you attempt to play a simplified road game because you know the team on the road is going to play a hard game because they're trying to defend their home ice. That is why it is.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, we talked earlier in the season about their power play when it was struggling and how they couldn't get McDavid to shoot the puck with the man advantage. They were dusting it off and not trying to move it around, maybe. Or not trying to just get shots on net. Maybe that is the thing. Maybe you want to put on a show at home. Maybe you're a little bit more fancy. Maybe when you get on the road, you kind of get more into that gladiator mentality of just win with ugly hockey or whatever it takes. And as opposed to at home with the lights in front of your fans, maybe it's just a little bit of a different mindset. I don't know. I mean, I've never been in that situation. I would think that the principle should stay the same. But if that's what you're seeing, Matt, I mean, you've been there. And if you're sensing guys are maybe it's a little bit more showtime at home, maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, what's funny about it is if you look at four of the top six power plays in the league are much better at home than they are on the road. So the orders, maybe it's inconsistency. Who knows what it is? I think it's just, hey, there's bounces here and there. A lot of it probably has to do, I'd have to look at the penalty-killing teams they played at home, maybe two on the road, if that has something to it. But
yeah, it could be. You know, could be. The other thing, too, is when you get a power play on the road, the other team still gets first change, right? So they still get first choice of penalty killers.
So in theory, you should be getting the best penalty killers.
Exactly. You should be getting better penalty kill matchups at home, you would think. But yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to know of their power play goals if they've been scored against the other team's top killing units or if it's been maybe against secondary units. So the Oilers' number one power play unit out there against the second tier penalty killing unit. Maybe that's something to do with the changes. I don't know, man. I'm throwing stuff against the wall because it doesn't make sense.
I mean, just looking at the stats I have in front of me right now, too, if you want to look at an interesting stat, look at how many giveaways, power play giveaways they have in games at home. So games when they do not have any power play giveaways, I haven't added up the actual percentages here, but I think there's two games where they do not have a power play giveaway where they haven't scored a goal. So almost every single game where they do not turn over the puck on the power play, they score a power play goal. Now, in all the games when they're turning over pucks, a majority of them, they're not scoring. You know, I think if I'm counting, it's like up to 10 or 11 almost. Yeah. So it's...
Well, they kind of went through a little run where their power play was really good for a little bit there. Like, really good. They were winning games with their power play. And Todd McClelland had made a few subtle tweaks. And Woodcroft and their staff, they injected Letestu into there, which helps you win draws. And he had a nice one-timer. They had a few elements that were going well for them. And I'm not sure if... try to mirror that or get back to that a little bit more. Just that shoot first mentality. Puck retrievals are important, right? Like, you have to be able to go and get pucks and win battles on the power play, especially on the power play, to your point, Matt, about giveaways and being able to get it back. So I don't know. It's definitely not a great trait, but it is one that has a good chance of turning itself around.
Well, especially here, six games in a row at home. No back-to-backs in the six games. It's not like every game's against a top team. You've got some teams here you should be able to beat when you look at the standings if they play well. So we'll see if they take advantage of it.
For sure. What are they going to get out of 12 points here in these six games? Like, what do you figure? I'm thinking they'll get 9 out of 12 points.
Ooh.
Which is pretty optimistic.
Yeah, 4-1 and 1.
I think that's the direction they're heading in.
Well, you look, New Jersey's a team they should beat.
Yeah.
Arizona, definitely a team they should beat. Right? Calgary will be playing their second of back-to-back on Saturday, so a little bit of an advantage there. That's a game they should win. And who are the last two games against?
Panthers, Predators.
Okay, well, those two teams as well. Nashville is really underachieving.
Yeah,
but you know, tonight's the game. I think though. Tonight's the game, though. I think you get San Jose. There's lots on the line. They're a very good team. And there's a pretty good rivalry here brewing between these two. You start off, I think the Oilers need a good start on their homestand, and if they get that tonight, that could go a long way.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it'll be interesting how long they stick with Draisaitl playing with McDavid. I think we know that's the best combination they've come up with, and they're a dominant line when they're together. But as you get up against a deeper team like a San Jose team or some of these other teams that can come at you with a few lines, you don't have that Draisaitl on the second line coming over the boards after McDavid for that secondary threat. So they're very top heavy when he creates his lineup this way. I like it. I think that that line's so dominant that they should continue to do it, but it does make them top heavy, and we'll see how that affects them against a team like San Jose.
Shonger, have a good one. We'll see you at the rink.
Okay, great to talk to you guys. See you later.